This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Powered by U Mobile, Malaysia's number one 5G network.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. At the United Nations, there are 6 official languages, and tomorrow they celebrate Chinese Language Day. More than 1.3 billion people are native speakers, and it's one of the most widely spoken languages in the world. Even here in Malaysia, Chinese is widely spoken, including the many dialects. But it's also a point of contention and debate as to whether its teaching and usage is divisive as it becomes increasingly politicised. To discuss this topic is Ngan Teng Yee, President of the KL and Selangor Chinese Assembly Hall. Thank you for joining us again. I think we look at the history of the country. The Chinese who migrated here wanted to preserve their language and culture with clans and associations followed by schools, especially in the 20th century. Chinese language and schools became politicised. How did we get to this point?
The Chinese education being politicised, this is probably, you know, the history can originate from the British colony time. You know, British adopted a divide and conquer approach to control their colony better.
Mm.
And that mentality has somewhat, you know, inherited and continued onwards. So that is very unfortunate. However, I think that should be addressed and can be better managed.
Mm. Unfortunately, it still seems to continue to today, doesn't it?
That is true.
Yeah. Now, actually, in Southeast Asia, Malaysia is the exception where we have full-fledged Chinese schools and national-type vernacular schools where all three languages are taught. Recently, the federal court ruled that vernacular schools where Mandarin and Tamil mediums of instruction are constitutional. Was this outcome of this long-drawn legal fight a relief?
Certainly it's a relief, but there is a possibility that this will continue.
Okay, so the court case is not the end of the matter?
Because the court case can be brought up by new parties.
Okay.
So we don't know whether, we hope that it will be, you know, this will put a stop to the whole thing, and this will be a full stop, but however, we are not sure whether that will be the case and, you know.
So you think that unfortunately Chinese schools and language, like what I asked you earlier on, will continue to be politicised? There's no end to this?
It will be. It will continue to be politicised in the current context.
Mm.
I think the government should do a better job in terms of unifying the Malaysian. As a country, we have many different people. We have so many different races.
Mm.
Not only just Chinese, Malay, Indians. We have the Kadazans, you know.
Iban,
Orang Asli, and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of differences, but there's also a lot of commonalities. So as a leader of as a government and leader of the country, the government should look at how to maximize the common factors and minimize the differences and unify the people towards a better Malaysia.
Okay, so focus on the commonalities,
exactly.
Right? But then what do you say to those detractors who say that those who send their children to Chinese vernacular schools are not nationalistic enough and they just want to perpetuate their ethnic identities?
Right. I mean, the Chinese vernacular school actually is governed by the Ministry of Education. The syllabus, the curriculum is all detailed by the Ministry of Education. In fact, the curriculum is no different from the government's, you know, the
government primary school.
Yeah. So they are basically the same, just taught in different languages. So I don't see how that could be a dividing factor. And also, it's a well-known fact that, you know, learning in the mother tongue is the most effective way of learning. In Malaysia context, the parents are very lucky because we have the choice of sending the children to different kind of pathways.
So you don't think that in the longer term, it does prevent the creation of a cohesive national identity? And maybe we should have taken the stance by Indonesia. They put a stop to all Chinese schools back in 1966 or restricted the hours of teaching of Chinese like what was done in Philippines and Thailand? Because some people say that's why the country seems to have, everybody speaks one language. Is that, do you not think that creates a national identity?
I mean, in a way, that would help to create a national identity, but at what price?
Okay.
You know, the price of the loss of diversity. And also, if you look at the history, the formation of Malaya is quite different from Indonesia, Philippines, Thailand, where in these countries, Chinese are a minority to start with. Whereas in Malaya, China has a larger population, larger representation, and the Chinese were partner to Malays in fighting for the independence. So we are not, it's a different kind of situation.
But then on the flip side, how do we then foster a national identity? Because yes, the enrollment of non-Chinese into vernacular schools has increased. I think the figures quoted are, it's up to 20%. But is that really a reflection of broader society? It's not, right?
In terms of fostering the national identity,
yeah,
I think it has to start from the top to start with.
Okay.
I mean, at the community level, at the people's level, we can all do our best.
Mm.
However, you know, the biggest factor has to come from the top. It's just like in a company, the CEO has the biggest influence.
Has to walk the talk.
Has to walk the talk. Where the department head can only do so much, right?
But at the same time, when I reflect on my own primary school education, the friendships I form, the prejudices and the biases that I have, I would say some of it develops from a very young age. And if I don't have that exposure or interaction with other Malaysians, am I then at risk of being a Chinese that remains in my Chinese bubble if I only go to Chinese school?
Right. I mean, Chinese vernacular school system is not without its faults.
Mm.
In a way, even though, as you say rightly, we have about 20% of non-Chinese in the Chinese vernacular school. In fact, some of the Chinese vernacular school has 100% non-Chinese, 100% Orasli, 100% Malay students, and these are not isolated cases. There are quite a few of this. However, for most of the Chinese schools, where the Chinese are the majority population, there is indeed, you know, there is indeed a situation where, you know, the students don't come into contact with other races.
Yeah, or not as much as they.
Not as much as it should be.
Yes.
So I think this is the place. This is what, you know, the educationist should look at, how to improve the interaction, encourage interaction between students from different, you know, schools.
Okay, and I'm curious, do you have a perspective on why suddenly, well, it's not suddenly, over the years, there's been an increase in enrollment of non-Chinese into Chinese schools? Is there something different that Chinese schools are doing, vernacular schools at least?
I think there are a couple of factors.
Mm.
If you look at the schools where there are more, you know, non-Chinese students, they're usually at the fringe. They're usually in the rural area, whereby there are not enough Chinese students there.
Okay.
So that is more determined by the population distribution in that area.
Okay.
Of course, why would the parents of these non-Chinese send their children to the Chinese school? We have done some survey.
Mm.
I think one of the reasons is that they want their children to learn some Chinese. And number two, they feel that the Chinese schools has better teachers. They have a better teaching standard.
Mm.
So the children will receive a better, you know, education.
Okay, so some of them, the parents just act in the best interest of their children at the end of the day, right? But things aren't smooth sailing for Chinese schools either, because I read that for urban schools, overcrowding is an issue. Whilst in rural schools, sometimes there's under-enrollment. I'm just curious, just in terms of these schools which are where there's under-enrollment, is the government encouraging these schools to be relocated easily, or is the government reluctant to do so?
It's a very, very interesting, you know, point of note. They are, as you say rightly, too many students in the city,
in the urban city,
too few students, not enough students in the rural area.
Yes, because I've heard of parents queuing overnight to send their children to Chinese primary schools in KL because they so desperately want a place.
But in the rural area, the principals are begging the parents to send their children to their schools. As a matter of fact, you know, there's a term for this small little school. They call it Sekolah Kurang Murid, SKM. They have a special term for that by the Ministry of Education. In 2022, there are 3,017 such schools.
Oh, quite a number.
That's defined by below 150 students.
Mm.
And year 2023, there is a slight increase. Now there's 3,038 such schools.
Is there any resolution to this? Is there a way of solving this problem?
So if you look at it, why is the reason for, you know, having so many of these SKMs, Sekolah Kurang Murid? It's because of the urbanization, right? The young working forces, they want to look for better living. So they move to the big cities.
Yeah, naturally.
Naturally. And of course, their children will be educated in the big cities. And in the kampong area, you will have all the older folks. Mm. And therefore, you don't have enough students. So this is a common, it's a worldwide phenomenon. There's nothing new here. But what is new here is that the government is not relocating the Chinese schools
to the urban
areas. To the urban area. Or, I mean, as in like closing down the school that doesn't have, they are willing to close down the schools in the, you know, in the kampong area, but they are not so willing to open up new schools in the needed places. So there's not enough the rationalization of the resources.
Despite the request of the Chinese community.
Exactly. Oh, okay. In fact, because I'm also in the Para Chinese School Board Association, so we have been handling some cases whereby there was this school that was closed down last year because there's no student. So they want to relocate, as in like using the license to relocate to Putrajaya. But the process is a very tedious process, full with hurdles.
And when you go and see the government, what are the reasons given? Because education should be something that you would imagine the government will encourage, right?
Right. Well, I mean, officially, they would not say that they will not allow you to, you know, open up new schools, but in practice, it's very difficult. If you look at the statistics. In fact, you know, when we were there, they were saying that they keep throwing all kinds of hurdles.
How long would it take, or has it, in your experience, if to succeed?
It could take 3, 4, 5, 6 years.
Just for relocation?
Yeah, and in some cases, never.
Okay, and then in that case, how do you rate this Madani government's policies and approach towards Chinese schools in general? Has there been a change since we've had also this change in government?
I think I'm happy to say that the Madani government is actually taking some positive steps, even though it's quite small yet. For example, the Chinese Independent School has received slightly more allocations towards the Chinese schools. There are 60 plus 3 Chinese Independent Schools.
Yes.
And the Chinese vernacular schools, it's not just the Chinese vernacular school. The primary schools, they are also receiving more fundings in terms of repair, maintenance.
This includes, of course, the Tamil vernacular schools also, right? But is the headwind actually for Chinese schools the lack of teachers? I heard there's something like shortage of 1,300 teachers for Chinese vernacular schools. Or am I just scratching this?
Well, this is an age-old issue. Nothing new there. There have been many reasons given, like there are not enough applicants for the teachers training course.
Apparently, there's only going to be 252 Chinese language teachers graduating from the Education Ministry Teachers Training Institutes until the next 4 years.
But however, I think in the last year, there were more applicants.
Okay.
But they were all rejected for various reasons. So that is a bit of a black box situation, which we don't quite understand.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Ngan Teng Yee, president of the KL and Selangor Chinese Assembly Hall. After the break, will the Unified Examination Certificate, UEC, ever be recognized? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile, Malaysia's number one 5G network.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill, where in the hot seat this morning is Ngan Teng Yee, president of the KL and Selangor Chinese Assembly Hall, in conjunction with the United Nations Chinese Language Day, which happens tomorrow. Now, what else is on the wish list, actually, to encourage Chinese education in this country?
In terms, actually, it's not just the Chinese education. I mean, Chinese education is good with the, you know, the teaching of mathematics and rigorous homework and the teachings and all these things.
It's a holistic look at the education system, isn't it?
It is. However, in the 21st century, we feel that, or at least I feel that, there has to be a big change because the 21st century is full of uncertainty and changes.
Mm.
So what we have to do is in the education is to teach our students to have adaptability.
But some people say the rota system of the Chinese schools don't actually encourage that.
And this is where reform has to be made. In fact, it's not just the Chinese schools, also all the other schools.
We don't allow our children to be so innovative and think out of the box.
Right. I mean, the Ministry of Education is trying to impart higher thinking skills. Mm. However, higher thinking skills is easier said than done, right? I mean, to have critical thinking, you need to have more interaction between the children and students and the teacher, which means that it has to be a small class. However, we all know that, you know, in most of the government schools, especially in the big in the cities,
it's 40, 50, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So how can you have more interaction?
It's back to funding, isn't it?
Actually, it's more about resource allocation and focusing on the right needs. And, you know, the other thing is that there are less and less students wanting to study the science stream at the secondary school level, at the tertiary level. And this is a big concern because if you want to attract new investment, high-tech investment, we have to have skilled workers. And if the students are not choosing the science stream, where do we get all the skilled workers?
Now, in Malaysia, we actually have a satellite campus of Xiamen University, 150 acres on the edge of KL. So on the higher education front, a good example of how Chinese education is being developed and a positive sign of cooperation between, I suppose, G2G, between the Malaysian and Chinese government, right? Now, are you encouraged by such a move? I mean, is it a good step that Malaysians graduate with a tertiary degree from a Chinese university? Should we have more of this in Malaysia?
Well, certainly from the point of choices, it's always good to have more universities. However, in terms of having more universities, I mean, Chinese universities, I mean, it's good to have, but it's not quite that necessary.
Okay.
In the sense that today it's quite easy for Malaysian students to study in China universities. China government is encouraging more international students, including Malaysian students. So it's not that difficult to get into the good Chinese universities.
Yeah, but you probably do need to be extremely...
Not necessarily.
Good in the language? No.
I mean, you have to be good in the language.
Yes.
But you don't have to be like the top students. You don't have to compete with the Chinese students.
Yeah, but I suppose the idea here is to have more options, right? More options for Malaysians is always a good thing.
It's always a good thing.
And maybe if it's affordable, that's even better.
That's right.
But at the same time, I want to talk about the Unified Examination Certificate. It's not recognised, cannot be used to apply for public universities when it's accepted in Singapore, China, Australia, US and UK. Sarawak State Government does and has done so since 2014. The Madani government has stated they have no plans to do so at the moment. What are your views on this?
I mean, it's always a regret that, you know, the government is not recognising the UEC. However, there is a consensus that maybe it's becoming less and less relevant.
How so?
As you say rightly, that, you know, the certificate is recognised worldwide by a lot of international universities, renowned universities, recognized by Singapore.
Which is ironic, right? So ironic. These countries recognize it, but we don't.
Exactly. So it's more of it's actually a political, you know, situation.
Rather than academic. But there are some who say that the UEC neglects Bahasa Malaysia and that its history syllabus is heavily based on other countries. Is there some merit to that view, though?
Oh, that's interesting. Actually, Bahasa Malaysia is also taught in, you know, the Chinese independent schools. And talking about the history, because there's this accusation that the history syllabus is a bit skewed or, you know, not fair, not balanced. There was actually a working committee formed to study into this. It's actually found that the history syllabus in the UEC is actually very balanced. They have world history, they have Malaysia history, much more balanced than what we have in the, you know, government school, actually.
Okay, so sometimes it's back to Chinese education being politicized rather than having a real close look at what is truly the case.
I think so.
Yeah. Now, it's the morning run after all, so we have to talk about business and money. But does the fact that a significant number of Malaysians speak Chinese give us an edge when it comes to attracting Chinese investments into this country? Because recently they've been very busy. I mean, after all, Geely Motors did take up a stake in Proton, for example. They're part of involved in a lot of infrastructure and property development.
I think there are many different factors. I mean, if you look at the FDI, China is the fourth largest investing country in Malaysia. If you look at the tourism, we have 1.47 million of Chinese tourists last year. And this year, the tourism Malaysia is targeting 5 million.
Yeah.
Big jump. And China and Malaysia. China has been the biggest trading partner to Malaysia for the last 15 consecutive years. So all this point to the fact that China has an important role in terms of business economy towards Malaysia. Now, whether the Chinese businesses will invest in Malaysia, I think it's just like any investment. It depends on many different factors, especially if you talk about FDI. It's a long-term investment. So political stability, the proper legal framework, infrastructure. I think the other one that's most important is also the availability of the skilled workforces.
Yes.
Especially when we are now trying to attract, high-tech industry. So we have to have high-tech workers, right? So they will consider all these things. But certainly, Chinese-speaking environment has a great appeal.
In January 2023, when we last spoke to you, it was the KL and Selangor Chinese Assembly Hall 100-year anniversary. And that time, my colleague Philip asked you whether you were optimistic about Malaysia with the new Madani government. Now, we are in April, so a good 1 year and 4 months. Do you still have that same level of optimism, especially when it comes to race relations?
Right. I think I will still have the optimism, but however, I'm also somewhat saddened to see all the development of all the sensationalization of religious, racial issues. I think the government should take a more proactive approach to put a stop to this. At least try to emphasize our commonalities, as what I said from the beginning.
Yeah.
Maximize our common factors, minimize our differences.
But then not really choosing to do so at this moment. At least that's what we get the sense, right? So I know in your recent Hari Raya wishes as the president of the Assembly Hall, you wished that Malaysian political parties can continue to cultivate and practice the values of Zhongyang. Did I get it right?
Zhongyang,
which is our values like simplicity, honesty, sincerity. Are we asking too much from our politicians? Because they all want to stay in power and sometimes they choosing the more radical path seems easier.
However, it's true that sometimes in the short term, taking the radical path may be easier to gain success, fame. However, that may not be so sustainable because I think for a country to prosper, everybody has to work together. We have to believe in each other. We have to have a cohesive front. So when we radicalize, we are divided. I don't think that is good for the country as a whole in the long run. So as government leaders, they have to try to unify the people. And therefore, the Zhongyong, the middle path, is very important because the middle path is not going to the two extremes.
On that note, thank you for your time. Today on The Breakfast Grill was Ngan Teng Yee, president of the KL and Selangor Chinese Assembly Hall. I'm Wong Shaning, BFM 89.9.
Business Fueling Minds, The Breakfast Grill with U-Mobile Biz, Malaysia's number one 5G network. 5G makes business sense.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.